speaking today with Wendy Davis, who's a candidate for State Senate District 10 in Tarrant County. First question I like to ask everyone is, why are you running for this particular office?
I'm running for it because I feel like we've been unrepresented in Austin in Senate District 10. We've had a longtime incumbent who is referred to often as the insider's insider in Austin, who I feel has really lost touch with the concerns, the everyday concerns of the community of people that he represents.
Now, you had served on Fort Worth City Council before. It's kind of a different experience going from municipal government to state. How do you think that experience with the city government will help you in Austin?
I think it will help me tremendously. First of all, because I learned very intimately how to connect with my community and formed some very close relationships working on issues that people care about. I think that representatives who begin at the local level and then move to broader representation tend to be the best because they've been on the ground, they've worked with their community very, very closely, and they take that same brand of representation with them forward on a larger scale, which is what I hope to do.
Now, you have kind of an interesting personal history. You were a single mother at the age of 19, and you wound up eventually graduating from Harvard Law School. How'd you get from point A to point B?
I had a wonderful role model. My mother, who only has a sixth grade education, was one of the hardest working people, is still one of the hardest working people I've ever met. She raised four children working at Brahms, and she taught us that with hard work and determination, you can accomplish your goals, and instilled in me a belief in myself. And when I did become a single parent at a very young age and was challenged working two jobs, trying to pay the bills, I knew that I was basically looking at a dead-end world for myself if I couldn't try to make a change in that. And fortunately, I've found my change through education. And I'm most appreciative of Tarrant County, what was then Tarrant County Junior College, it's now Tarrant County College, for the opportunity it provided me to access my education and to move out of that situation.
Now, college education and the cost of college education have been on a lot of people's minds lately. There was just a hearing in the Senate over the rising costs of Texas public college education. As you know, the legislature passed a law in 2003 that allowed colleges to set their own tuition and deregulated that. How do you evaluate that, and what do you think going forward should be done about it?
I'm very concerned about it. I'm the first to say that our public university system needs to be supported and financed. In 2003, the state was facing a pretty tough budget year. And in response to that, they took an easy door, which was allowing the university system to deregulate. It removed from the state the pressure to provide the financial resources that they'd been providing and had been asked to increase. And instead, it of course imposed those costs down to the lowest common denominator, the student and the student's family, asking them to pay more to help cover the cost of running that university system. I read an article in the paper yesterday that indicated that as a result of that deregulation, the public university system has now increased its cost by an average of 112%. And I'm very concerned about it because it's happened at the same time that we've had a crisis in the student loan market, and there are families who absolutely will not be able to send their children to those universities. As residents of the state of Texas, we've all been paying into a tax system for a long time, which we expect is going to help support a university system that we can send our children to that is affordable. And now we're basically being asked to pay twice. We're being asked to pay through our property taxes and our sales taxes that are supposed to be supporting that education system. And now we've got to pay these highly increased tuition costs in order for our children to be able to attend. There is no easy solution because the universities have to be supported. But I think the state needs to continue. Probably one of its most important roles is to make sure that it's taking care of the education of its citizenry. And if that's not a priority for the way we're spending our money in the state of Texas, we're doing something wrong.
Do you believe that the tuition should be, should, do you believe that the tuition deregulation should be repealed or just reformed?
I would have to look at it further to say completely, but I think repeal is probably the solution. And the reason that I say that is because oversight is important. It's important not only in keeping costs to an affordable level, but oversight in terms of who are the children that we're educating? What is the agenda going to be? What will our priorities in that university system be in terms of the young people who are coming through there? And when deregulation occurred, which of course at its essence, at its core, was to allow this increase in costs or the increase in tuition, it also at the same time removed an oversight that I think had been performing a very important function over the university system. And unless we go back to a regulated state, we're not likely to have that oversight in place again.
Of course, education at the more at the lower level is a big issue as well. School finance is always an issue for the legislature. In 2006, they passed what was originally billed as a school finance reform, but was really a property tax cut plus a,
exactly.
some new taxes being passed that don't really cover the cost of the property tax cut.
Exactly.
You know, going forward, what should be done with school finance on a more general level?
Number one, we have to make it a priority. And, you know, I observe somewhat of a shell game in that last session where we purportedly fixed the school finance system. We, of course, created a new business tax, which in some respects was probably important and necessary. In other respects, I think we've now taxed a small business community that we should be doing more to support, not to burden. But at the same time, when the door opened to consider how we were going to change this tax system, purportedly to help increase the funding for our public education system, we allowed people to come in while the door was open and take advantage of achieving some tremendous tax breaks for themselves. One of those was foreign-owned offshore drilling companies that were paying millions of dollars in taxes, property taxes, into our system, who were provided relief from those property taxes. I don't think that's what any of us, the citizens who are relying on our legislators to represent us, were expecting when we had a conversation about school finance reform. I think that what we hoped was that to the extent that property taxes could be relieved of the burden of that system, that there would be a more fair accommodation in terms of how those resources would be found, and to provide those kinds of tax breaks while at the same time continuing to underfund our public education system, I think is unconscionable. And again, it's not answerable to what our number one mission should be. Taking care of the children of our state has got to be one of the very top priorities of any state government, and I think we've stepped away from that duty, and we really need to get back to making it a priority.
Since talk about children, that segues nicely into the issue of children's health insurance. As you know, again in 2003, the eligibility requirements for CHIP were tightened, and a lot of children were no longer eligible for it. Some of that was restored in the last legislative session. What do you want to do about CHIP?
We've got to fully restore it. And interesting in that question, we've all been concentrating on how many children were cut from it. And there were over 230,000 children who were removed. That was the same budget year that we allowed the university system to deregulate. And again, there was this appetite for how do we find a quick fix to the budget crunch that we're under in a particular year. In my opinion, you never find a quick fix to a budget solution by balancing your budget on the backs of the health of children. And that's what we did. And not only now are we working to try to restore where we were, and by the way, we only got about halfway there, not even halfway there in the last session, to restoring the children who had been cut. We've got to do more than that. We were already, because of our system of qualifying to be covered by CHIP, we were already covering many, many fewer children in the state of Texas than other states were covering because our criteria was set so high. And we've left this tremendous gap between what Medicaid is covering in our communities and what CHIP is able to cover. And there's still a tremendous number of children who do not have health care accessible to them. It's very short-sighted, not only because it fails to take care of an individual child, but because over the long term, and I was one of these people, when I did not have health insurance and my children were sick, we went to the emergency room. And at the end of the day, we're all paying those costs. We're paying those costs into our county hospital systems and, of course, in terms of our higher insurance premiums for those who do pay for their own insurance. It's not the answer. Preventative health care, of course, saves so many costs down the road. And without health care, there are many, many children who aren't accessing a preventive health care system, which in the long run is costing us, I think, a lot more money.
Okay. An issue that was recently before the Senate had to do with the confirmation of a new chair for TxDOT.
Yes.
And a conversation about the direction TxDOT has gone in terms of both, well, dealing with the rest of the government and being accountable, and also
yes.
the issue of toll roads and the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Yes.
What do you see when you look at TxDOT, and what do you want to see when you look at TxDOT?
I was on the Regional Transportation Council for 8.5 years, and I chaired that group a few years ago. I have a lot of experience with and a lot of frustrations with TxDOT and with the commission that oversees it. TxDOT, unlike other departments of transportation in states around this country, has concentrated solely on the building of road systems. And there's no question that we are not unlike any other community. We are never going to build our way out of our congestion and mobility and air quality problems. But it's been an agency that's had a very short-sighted view toward dealing with transportation problems and putting creative solutions in place. Layer on top of that the fact that they haven't been overseen by the legislature, so they're not being overseen by citizens who hopefully have a voice through their representative in the Senate or in the House. Instead, they're overseen by a group of appointed officials who are appointed by the governor, five people who make the decisions about what the TxDOT policies are going to be, how their money is going to be spent, and what their priorities are going to be in terms of building and repairing and caring for our transportation systems. The commission that I long dealt with when I was on the Regional Transportation Council began moving us in this direction of toll roads in response to what was inadequate funding of our transportation system. And we were forced as a region to look to toll roads to provide solutions to our mobility because it was the only solution that was being offered to us. The very disappointing part about the way that system has been structured is not only are our citizens paying twice for every road they're driving on, they're paying at the gas pump in their gas taxes, purportedly to pay to build the road system in Texas, but they're then being asked to pay again a toll. On top of that, those tolls are going into a private organization, the North Texas Toll Authority, which is using those toll proceeds for purposes of building more toll roads in the region. And so never never ever will the toll be removed from any particular road. Long after it's paid for, long after the money's been put in place to maintain that road in the future, you will never stop paying a toll, because that agency is tasked with building more toll roads, and their priority is having the funding to do that. So you and I are driving on a road that we may have paid for four times over, but we're paying for someone in Collin County or an area, you know, very far from where we are, to pay for their particular road. And the problem with it over time is that we are in danger of literally having to pay for every road that we're driving on. And I can see that unfolding in North Texas in terms of the decisions that have been made, 121, 161, so many of our mobility solutions that we've defined for North Texas have been defined through that toll system. And in the short term, I think we're stuck with that. In the longer term, we've got to have people who begin to think about prioritizing the funding of that system and to stop thinking about it solely as road funding. It has to be multi-transportation systems, regional rail, light rail, rapid bus systems. All of those solutions need to come together to be part and parcel of the way we build our transportation system in the state of Texas. And with an appointed group of commissioners, if they aren't tasked with that kind of responsibility or that kind of framework, we're never going to get there. I appreciate what the Sunset Commission staff has advise, which is you need to create a body that's legislative in nature, that's overseeing TxDOT in the future, so that you do have that channel between citizen, representative, and TxDOT, which of course is a channel that's completely missing right now.
Well, some people have suggested that perhaps the office of TxDOT chair should be elected rather than appointed. What do you think about that?
I think it's probably a good idea, because you'd have a person who would be forced to put a policy position forward and then be elected based on that policy position. And road systems are not political. They're not Republican issues or Democrat issues. They're issues that affect all of us, regardless of our political party. And I think we share common concerns about them. I think if you asked a Republican on the street and a Democrat on the street whether they think building toll roads is the right answer for our transportation problems in the state of Texas, they're going to say no, uniformly. So forcing a person to run on policy positions about how they're going to take the transportation system forward is probably a good idea. At the very least, that person would be answerable to a voting community who could remove them if the vision wasn't realized as promised.
Well, of course, one of the reasons why TxDOT has pushed toll roads has been claims on their part that the gas tax is insufficient to provide for Texas transportation needs. One senator, John Corona, has proposed actually indexing the gas tax to inflation, and it has been suggested by some studies that that would be sufficient to meet Texas needs. Of course, anytime you talk about raising a tax, people get up in arms. What's your opinion of this?
I understand. And you know, when we were at $2 a gallon gasoline, that was a more appealing solution. We're going to be at $5 a gallon gasoline by the time we get to the end of the summer, I think. And if we are talking about raising the gasoline tax at the same time that the cost per gallon is going up as dramatically as it is, I'm very, very concerned about the unemployed, the underemployed, who we have not provided any alternative means of transportation for. I'm very concerned about how they are going to manage to get to work every day. What some of us view as something that we take for granted for others is an absolute luxury. And I think we have to be very, very careful right now while that gas price is rising so dramatically about a conversation that would increase it even more through an indexed gas tax. Now, do I think that should have been done long ago? Would we be in the transportation crisis that we're in right now had we done that? Probably not. But I don't know that that's the right solution for today. One of the things we do need to talk about is the way we have distributed the monies from those gasoline taxes. They were intended to go for transportation purposes. And in each session, more money is funneled away from the gas tax into other venues and away from transportation. At the Regional Transportation Council, in one of the last meetings that I was in before I left my seat there, we had been provided information showing over $1 billion of diversion, had an increase of over $1 billion in diversion from the gas tax in the last legislative session. And I know how challenging budgets can be. At the local level, I think I have very good experience with being forced to make priorities within a budget system. But that's been an easy pot of money to siphon, pardon the pun, and I think we need to get our priorities back in the right place on how we're spending it. The other issue I think that's really an important part of a conversation for Texas going forward is how those monies are being distributed between our rural and our urban communities. They aren't being distributed, on population-based equations. And instead, you know, and Trans-Texas Corridor was a prime example of this. Instead, a lot of money is being spent in rural road system infrastructure where the demand simply isn't as high. The crisis simply isn't as great as it is in our urban communities. And we, I think, need to strike a better balance with how we're prioritizing the spending of those monies. Houston has had a very powerful and effective legislative body that has managed to garner for itself a much larger percentage of those monies than other urban districts have, but it's not an equitable system as it stands today because of that. And I think the Tarrant County, of course, the entire Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex region needs to be getting more of our fair share of those monies back, population-based in principle, than we're getting right now.
Okay. Of course, a lot of people, especially up in North Texas, have been talking about immigration issues. What, if anything, do you think the state legislature should be doing on the subject?
It's a federal issue, and clearly the state should work with the federal government in terms of how we implement what the solutions are there. There's clearly no easy answer, or someone would have come up with it by now. I think there was a sincere attempt at it in the last federal legislative cycle, but we don't have the solution yet. I do think this, a wholesale roundup of every person in our community and a deportation of those persons would have a human effect that is crippling, and it would have an economic effect that would be crippling. I think we've got to try to define a system that helps create a legalized workforce here, understanding that we are relying on that workforce, and understanding the human side of the issue at the same time.
Okay. When you first announced that you were intending to run for this office, there was some controversy from members of the Democratic Party over the fact that you had voted recently in a Republican primary. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that.
I'll start by saying that when I was in eighth grade, I was asked to mock vote for president. I was the only person who voted for Jimmy Carter. And it's been a long trend for me ever since. My two daughters have shared similar experiences of mock voting in their in their school systems, and both of them have found themselves to be on the minority side. But I was raised as a Democrat. I've raised my children as Democrats. I've voted in a couple of Republican primaries, and I've done that because I'm a lawyer. And if you know anything about politics in Tarrant County, what you know is there are a lot of judges with R's next to their name, no judges with D's who are running for election to the bench. Many of those judges with R's next to their names happen to be D's. And as an attorney who cares about the way our judicial system is operating in Tarrant County, I, like many Democratic lawyers, have voted in Republican primaries to elect good judges to the bench because it was the only choice we were presented with.
All right. Also, something that came out of the primary was a challenge to your spot on the ballot by some, I believe, members of the Firefighters Union. That was thrown out of court, but because they didn't have standing. Is there any more information on that? Where do we stand with that?
I've heard nothing else from that. I will say this, that when the appellate court rejected that ballot challenge, they were clear in their comments to indicate that they had no patience for the challenge, whether it be on the standing question or on the merit question. I'm hopeful they were trying to send a signal that regardless of whether my opponent himself properly brings such a challenge, they don't have patience for the underlying argument of that challenge, and it won't be successful if he does attempt to do that. I think people saw that for what it was. A person, my opponent, who is afraid to stand up and be accountable to a group of voters with whom he's had very, very little connection and contact.
Okay. When you get to Austin, what's the first bill you want to pass?
Gosh, what a great question. It'll definitely be education-related. I don't know what it'll be called. But for me, having found my way out of poverty through education, I want to make sure that every child in Texas has those same opportunities that I had. Again, not only because of the impact that it has on that individual child and their family, but the long-term impact it has on Texas. And if we don't start treasuring that asset more, we will wind up with an undereducated, under-talented workforce, and the ripple effect in our economy and our tax base long-term will be something that we will suffer for many, many years.
Okay. Wendy Davis, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure, Charles.